Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to Kildare's KFM. It's Friday. It's the 6th of October. Caoimhe Hearney here with you until 3. Coming up first on today's show, we'll speak to Dr. Des Room. He's a vet in Kildare Town and he'll be giving us advice on how to keep your pet calm if they're afraid of fireworks in the lead up to Halloween. At 2:20, Susanna Morrissey, wellbeing coach and mindfulness expert, will be giving us tips for beginners on how to get into meditation. At 2:35, Julian Despon, General Secretary of Conrad na Gaeilge, will be telling us why the government should more than double its investment in the Irish language and the Gaeltacht in this year's budget. And then lastly, we will hear from Lorcan Burke, Potato and Fresh Produce Manager at Bord Bia, because today is National Potato Day. So if you want to get in touch with the show, you can call in 045 898 999. You can email me to studio@kfmradio.com. Or you can send us in a text or WhatsApp.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, although ghosts and ghouls may give us a scare in the lead up to Halloween, nothing frightens us more than our pets being in danger, especially if you are a pet owner or lover. Well, luckily, I'm joined on the line now by Dr. Des Groom. He's a vet in Kildare Town and he's here to give us advice. Good afternoon, Des.
Hi, Caoimhe. Thanks for having me on today.
Delighted to have you on. Des, I think sometimes when you think of Halloween and you think of pets, you automatically think of dogs. But are other animals as in tune to, you know, the sounds of things going off? Like would cats hear sounds the same way that dogs would?
Yes, they would. Cats are just as sensitive. Cats are more introverted in many ways than dogs. They're more solitary. They're more likely to seek a quiet hiding place if they're in a built-up neighbourhood and there's a lot happening during Halloween. And cats are particularly at risk where there are bonfires. And the big problem with any of these animals that are out and about is that fear will drive them to get lost or bolt. So there's a higher incidence of road traffic accidents, cats and dogs being injured by traffic on the road during Halloween, simply because these animals are frightened, they're confused, they're running about in the dark, probably running away from fireworks and so on. So in every part of the country, vets will report a higher incidence, unfortunately, of dogs and cats being hit by cars on the road. Mm-hmm. That's one unfortunate byproduct. Another unfortunate byproduct is dogs and indeed cats going missing.
Right.
We noticed here in our practice every year in the day or two after Halloween, there's a spike in people arriving into the surgery with stray dogs in particular. And what's happened is that the dogs have been probably outside their own front doors and they get frightened, confused, disorientated because of either bonfires or fireworks and they run away. And again, then they will get lost or they'll get picked up and go aren't their owners and so on.
Okay. Are there any other animals, specifically like household pets, maybe that would, you know, be fearful of sounds that we should be aware of?
Well, never mind me. Hopefully other household animals, such as exotic pets or smaller rabbits and so on, would be indoors and kept indoors and they'd be safe. I would say now with the impending or the encroachment of housing in rural and semi-rural areas, be aware of the fact here in County Kildare that many of our newer housing estates in towns like Newbridge, Naas and Kildare Town, they are adjacent to or adjoining stud farms.
Mm.
And that would be, now horses, hopefully the owners would have them in. But fireworks in the evening or in the afternoon, for instance, be aware of the fact if you are in a new housing estate in Naas or in Kildare, be aware of the fact that it's a traditionally an equine area, horse area, and horses will be in fields close by.
Okay.
And the injuries that horses can be inflicted with through galloping and running from fear, those injuries can be terrible.
Okay. Coming back to cats and dogs then, cats, you know, tend to maybe come in and out. A lot of people will have, you know, a little cat flap and they'll wander off. So in terms of cats then, you should keep them in then all night, I suppose, on Halloween, because they are likely to run away.
Keep them in. Keep the dogs in as well, 100%. I would say all pet dogs. Look, it's the winter evenings are closing in, and to typically... by the time Halloween comes around, it's dark before 5 o'clock in the evening and so on. So I'd say, unfortunately, after the evening walk, your dogs and your cats should be indoors. Okay. and kept in. But for the week before, I'd say maybe, or up to 2 weeks before Halloween, when all of the carry-on and the activities start around the towns, you know.
Mm. Is there anything you can do when you have your pets inside to keep them calm? Because, like, anyone who has a dog will know that sometimes, especially the younger ones, might get a little bit contrary, or they'll be jumping around trying to get out to see what's outside. Is there anything you can do to kind of keep them calm and at bay for those few days up to Halloween?
There is, because they are highly sensitive to noise and to any change in routine. Our customers report to us all the time, and pet owners, that their dogs are often very fearful, very distressed, even indoors. They'll be cowering under the kitchen table, cowering under the furniture and so on. There is, in terms of what you can do, there's an array of calming products that are herbal or natural or hormonal, very safe to give and are effective on a calming level to help alleviate that anxiety and tension that typically smaller dogs or younger dogs would have. So just to mention a few names, because these products can be got in any of your local vets. There's Feeliway, which is for cats, which is a plug-in diffuser. That's a hormonal calming scent or pheromone. Very effective. Very good feedback we get for that product. So Feeliway, which is a plug-in diffuser, like a perfume, very effective for calming cats. You plug it in by the cat's bed or by the cat's litter tray. So that's the first one. The second one, there's a similar plug-in diffuser called DAP for dogs. Again, these are a pheromone. They produce a scented hormone that mimics the hormones that the puppy's mothers that naturally give off, mimics one of the hormones that can be found in mother's milk. And these plug-ins have a calming effect. They're simply inhaled, have them plugged in the room where the dogs are, close to the dog's bed. So they're the two plug-in options. Then you have some herbal tablet and liquid options that can be given with the food, one of which is a natural herbal tablet called Calmin, C-A-L-M-I-N or Calmin. And there are a couple of other similar ones. Typically, these tablets would contain oxytocin, which is a natural calming hormone. They might contain prolactin, which is another natural calming hormone. They might contain valerian, which is a calming herb.
Okay.
Then lastly, in severe cases, right, where we do have high levels of anxiety reported to us, right, those dogs which literally cry all night from the distress of strange noises or strange bangs or whatever it is, many vets will occasionally prescribe medicated sedations or calming tablets along the lines of the Valium tablet, the diazepam tablets and so on. That's available. And if, as I say, the anxiety is severe enough, your vet will or can prescribe any of these medications as well.
Okay, so the last one there, only available by prescription, but the others, would you be able to get over the counter?
Yeah, you would.
Okay.
You would.
Okay.
In your vet and possibly in some pet shops as well.
Okay, Des, I have a message in here. Someone is asking, can dogs or cats see in the dark?
They can. They can see better than, because they're both dogs and cats are hunters.
Okay.
Cats in particular are natural hunters. They have far better sight in the dark than we do.
Right.
But again, all the science, as far as I know, is that they are colour blind.
Right.
So they have a different colour spectrum, but they do see far more than us in daylight and at night time.
Another thing in the run-up to Halloween is to be very careful about what kind of treats you give to your pets, especially if you have children, because chocolate can be poisonous to pets, can't it?
Yeah, a separate topic entirely, but exactly, you're correct. There are a few things I'm going to list off that can be toxic to pets and are very much part of the Halloween festivities and the Halloween traditions. Chocolate, as you mentioned, that's the obvious one, right? Now, the whole thing about chocolate is that it's dosage dependent. A couple of things about chocolate too is that milk chocolate can be safe enough, but dark chocolate is not safe at all. So the darker the chocolate, the more dangerous it is, the higher concentration of the toxin. And also remembering that a bigger dog might get away with eating a relatively small amount of chocolate, but a smaller dog won't get away with eating the same amount.
Okay.
Signs can vary from diarrhea to full-on seizures and liver damage.
Okay.
So that's the chocolate one. The other thing then, just briefly to mention, raisins.
Raisins.
Raisins are very much part of the Halloween festivities, and raisins are toxic to dogs, and again, cats are fussier. They're less likely to eat them, but that's something to be careful of too.
Okay, grapes as well, aren't they? They're quite toxic for dogs.
They are indeed.
Mm. Okay, so raisins, grapes and chocolate, they're the big ones to be looking out for. Do not give
Absolutely.
To your dog. Lastly, before I let you go, Des, any other tips for people in the run-up to Halloween in regards to their pets?
Well, keep them in after dark. That's the most important thing. And look, thankfully, nowadays, there are very few dogs out running around the neighbourhoods, unlike years ago where people's pets used to probably roam freer around the town and so on. People do keep their pets in, which is great. I actually think a good thing for people to look at as we get into the winter would be daycare. The use of doggy daycare facilities, or the opportunity to get your dog out and about and exercised earlier in the day. A tired dog is a happy dog. That would be a very good rule to remember. A tired dog is a happy dog. So the best thing of all you can do is just make sure that you're meeting your dog's exercise needs and socialization needs nice and early in the evening, and make sure that they're not full of beans and full of energy and bored and looking to get out in the evenings. If you have a tired dog, that dog will rest and sleep and be calm at night and hopefully be unbothered by the fireworks and by the Halloween carry-on in the neighbourhood.
Okay, lastly, Des, I have a message in here. I'm not sure what you think about this one. My dog loves coffee and milk when I'm having a cuppa. Is that okay for dogs?
Yeah, it's actually okay in the sense that there's no textbook that says coffee or milk are poisonous.
Okay.
But both of those things, there are dogs that are sensitive to milk, and milk can cause diarrhea in some cases, whether it's the lactose in it. Not all dogs are able to, they're not able to digest cow's lactose from cow's milk. And as regards to coffee, coffee is a laxative in humans as well, you know. So it's not something I'd be encouraging people to be putting into their dog's bowl too often, and certainly not in any great quantities.
Okay, thanks very much for that. That is Dr. Des Groom, a vet in Kildare Town. And don't forget to tune in next Tuesday, where Des will be back with vets and their pets from 11:30 on John Dunn's 11-2 show.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, mindfulness is the basic human ability to be fully present, aware of where we are and what we're doing, and maybe not to overly be reactive or overwhelmed by what's going on around us. Sounds simple, doesn't it? Or maybe not to some. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Susanna Morrissey. She is a well-being coach and a mindfulness expert at Wellness in Johnstown. Good afternoon, Susanna.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. Good to have you.
Delighted to have you on, yeah, Susanna. I suppose it says here now, right, I'm looking at an article, the goal of mindfulness is to wake up to the inner workings of our mental, emotional and physical processes. Like, is that easy to do?
No.
Okay.
It's not.
Good. So
That's
I'm not an outlier here, because I'm always there, like, I'll try and be mindful and then I'm thinking of like what I'll have for dinner in 2 days' time or something crazy like that.
Absolutely. And I mean, the first thing for everybody listening out there is to know that meditation has been around, I suppose, forever. before we even put a label on it. And it's really a practice of stilling our thoughts. I suppose a way not to identify, with our thoughts. And that is really, really difficult to do if you've never done it. It's the awareness of knowing that we're thinking and that we are not our thoughts. So to simplify it, I suppose, Caoimhe, it is a difficult thing for the mind to settle. I suppose nowadays most people's minds are like spinning tops, and they're spinning from one idea to the next idea without actually being present. And it is said that once you're present in your body, I suppose, if you're present in the breath, you can observe things with compassion, I suppose. And when you're not present, you observe things with harshly. You observe your thoughts harshly. So that's the benefits, I guess, of meditation. Lots and lots of ways, lots of thinkers about meditation. But really, for me, the easiest way to look at meditation is like a train. So if you imagine a train, and you're on the platform and the train pulls in, we tend to, as human beings, jump on every train that comes past us. And that's our thoughts. Mm. And if you can imagine that you are a watcher of the train, like a train spotter, so to speak, and you have a practice that stills the mind, you can watch your thoughts go by, but you're not jumping on every, I suppose, carriage or every thought that goes past you. So it is a practice, a practice that is not perfect. And that's really important to say at the outset.
Okay. I'm conscious of people maybe listening in thinking it's all well and good to try and be mindful, right? But then if you kind of bring in like the worries and stresses of everyday life, like, you know, if someone has like a parent dying, or maybe they're going through a divorce or a breakup, or, you know, they're unemployed, or, you know, they're worried about where their next paycheck is going to come from. Is it that easy to kind of settle down and think, right, I'm going to be mindful here, and I'm going to meditate, and I'm not going to let these worries of the world get on top of me?
Absolutely. And I think the first thing to know is you cannot control external situations. Yet we think we can. We think we can actually control it by worrying. And all you're doing is switching the worry to patience, and you're watching external things without being more involved in the pain, if you like. So it's a bit like they say in Buddhism, not that I'm bringing anything religious into this, but there's an idea of two arrows, okay? So if an arrow hits you, like you lose your job, death of somebody, or something in your life, as you say, a worry, you get the arrow first. We all get the pain first. The second arrow is what you do with that pain. That's how you process that pain. So you can take another arrow, or you can take the arrow out and say, well, the pain has happened. There's nothing I can do about that. So how can I still my mind? How can I become better from this situation? How can I work through the pain with breath, with meditation, as opposed to trying to eradicate it or get rid of it? Because it's impossible. It's impossible to get rid of external pain. It's there for all of us, suffering, unfortunately. It's not something you can do, it's there. So it's just a tool. It's just a tool to deal with worry. It's a tool to deal with anxiety. It's a tool. And you're less involved in the pain, if that makes sense. Trying to simplify that.
Yeah, so it's a management then, really, of your thoughts and your life and your worries, your pain.
It is. It's a way of looking at it. It doesn't mean they go away. I mean, you know, I've been meditating for, I don't know, 15 years, and I would sometimes say, have every reason in the world not to meditate. You know, I have to put the bins out, I have to do this, I have to do that. And there's always a reason, you know, and I think we just don't like to watch our thoughts. You know, we're frightened of our thoughts. So the first thing is just to be completely okay with whatever thought comes in. The first thing is to learn the breath, Caoimhe. The breath is the key. So the breath calms the nervous system. So when you're in any situation that you're responding in an anxious way, and it happens to all of us, all the time, lots of times during the day, even negative thoughts, is to take a breath. Right, take a breath for five. I can do a little meditation if you want on the radio.
I have to say, Susanna, like your voice alone kind of makes me feel quite calm. Like, I think I'd probably be a little bit flighty just generally, but you're very calming. So yeah, go for it.
Thank you. So let's try to breathe. So whatever you're doing, wherever you are, if you're in the car, you can keep your eyes open, obviously. Don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes, yeah. If you're seated or you're sitting down, let's just try a very simple breath. So just let their shoulders relax and feel the length of the spine and let all tension drain from the mind and take a deep breath in through the nose, counting up to five, and just hold that breath. Just stay in that pause for a moment and then exhale, if you can, through the nose, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and then take another breath. And you might take it a little longer, maybe take it to 6, and just hold for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then when you're ready, release all tension, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and then another breath. And as you stay in that pause, just let the mind soften, let the eyes soften, let the jawline soften, and just let all tension from the shoulders go and exhale, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. And as you continue now to breathe, just let the breath be felt in the body. You might place a hand on your tummy and feel that breath coming in, rising like a wave, holding at the top of the wave, and then feel that breath released calmly. You might observe, you've stilled the mind slightly, you feel a little calmer in your body. Just tune into that feeling of calmness, clarity. There may be thoughts crossing your mind. Your mind may wander. That's absolutely normal. Just stay with the breath now, taking it up to 6, all the way up to 6. And in that space, just allow yourself to feel at peace, feel that calm, being present just for that 2 or 3 seconds. And then exhale a little bit deeper, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and just stay. And just observe the gentle rising and falling of the breath. And that's presence.
Wow.
Connection.
That's okay. Amazing. I noticed two things that you said, shoulders and jaws. And I'm telling you, I wake up in the morning and my shoulders are at my ears and I wear a mouth guard to stop myself from grinding my teeth. So I think I need your services, Susanna.
Problem.
Like, just for people listening in today, like, I suppose, you know, obviously if you can go to a wellness centre like your own one, but you can do this at home, like, even just in a few minutes, really, can't you?
You can. I mean, we spend about 5.5 hours on our phone, Quiva, so there's no excuses really of scrolling other people's lives. So I always say, you know, why don't you just take 3 minutes, sit in your kitchen in the morning before everybody's up, really important. Don't feed the dog, don't feed the children, get up first. Or whoever's in your life, just stay present with yourself first. Find a nice place to sit down and then just start breathing like that. Take a 5 breath up, hold, take a 5 breath down, and just allow yourself to breathe for it. And that calms the nervous system. And then ask yourself, how's my mind today? Oh, restless. Interesting. This is the key. If you can identify the way you're feeling, you don't associate yourself with the feeling. That's what we do as human beings, which really causes a lot of suffering. So the minute you see pain, you go, oh, there's some pain, there's some anxiety. Fine. It creates a distance from your, once you breathe, it creates a distance so you're not in that story. So that's just very basic. 5, 5, 5 breath. Sit down for 3 minutes and then get up.
Okay, Susanna, that's amazing. Great advice there. And people can text in and let me know how you got on if you did try Susanna's tips for beginners there. Thanks very much, Susanna. Susanna
Morrissey,
you're
very welcome.
Wellbeing coach and mindfulness expert at Om Wellness in Johnstown.
Yeah. And I run actually a very meditation class as well. So if anyone wants to get in touch with me, I'm at Johnstown House Om Wellness. So feel free to get in touch later.
Now, the government should more than double its investment in the Irish language and the Gaeltacht in this year's budget. So say Conrad na Gaeilge. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Julian Despon. Good afternoon, Julian. He is the General Secretary of Conrad na Gaeilge.
Hi, here, Conflati.
Tom Aikama. Tell us, Julian, why do you think they need to double the investment?
Well, we've never really had ambitious funding for the Irish language and Gaeltacht, and I suppose where we're at, point we're at now at the moment is that things are starting to slide. So if you look at the amount of daily speakers of Irish inside the Gaeltacht, it's falling. The amount of daily speakers outside of the Gaeltacht, it's falling. The amount of people who have Irish as a percentage of the overall population has fallen below 40%. It's now at 37%. The amount of Gaelscoileanna and students attending Gaelscoileanna, it has slipped from 6.4% down to about 6.2% of students that are in the system. So basically, we're at a point where we're not dramatically increasing the amount of opportunities people have to use Irish or that they can learn Irish as well. And if we were to look to our neighbours in Wales, for example, they have a plan to 2050. They're funding that plan. They have targets like increasing their people who attend schools to the medium Welsh to increase that to 40%. They're at 23% now. And we just need more ambition. We need more, and more ambition means that we need to invest in that as well.
Okay, a ballpark figure then of what you currently the government will give in this budget or did give last year and what you're looking for now then?
Well, what we're doing is what the government provide for the Irish language at the moment is it's about 0.17% of overall government expenditure. Okay. And that seems like a very low figure. And what we're trying to do is increase that to 0.4% over the next 5 years. And part of what we did lately was we launched this growth plan, investment plan, that over 130 Irish language and Gaelic organisations have got behind. We've never had that much support for any of these plans before, where we're looking to increase that over that space of time. And it would dramatically increase what we can do for people in the community. So, for example, in Kildare there, you have great work going on by Kildare La Gaeilge and Sultan Solon and plenty of other groups there. Why wouldn't there be Irish Language Centre to give focus to the language in the county? That's something that we're promoting. This we're promoting scholarships for disadvantaged students who may never get the opportunity to go to the Gaeltacht because it's very expensive at this stage. It's 900 to 1,000 euros for a 3-week course. You know, we're talking about things like they do in Wales, where they have a scholarship scheme for adult learners of the language. That anybody under the age of 25 can get a free scholarship to learn Welsh. Anybody in the education system can do a Welsh course. We're talking about many different things, but one of the things I would like to emphasise, though, in the plan we're talking about, it's an investment plan. So what would actually come out of this plan as well is over 9,000 jobs. The vast majority of those in Gaeltacht areas, but they would obviously give a return to the state as well. So it's not just money for the sake of money. It's money to invest, to have a return, not only in language-wise, but also in economic terms as well.
Okay, it sounds like a great plan. The centre, definitely. And it is very expensive for people. I did go to the Gaeltacht. I was fortunate enough to be able to go. But like that, it can be difficult for a family if there's a couple of children, especially in a family. You know, it's not maybe possible to send two or three children away even in the 1 year or even over a couple of years because you're talking thousands, Julian.
You're dead right. And something that we're promoting in this plan as well is not only to have the 3-week courses during the summer, but to have courses during the year as well, where they can send, you know, from schools, from many of the schools that they go down and experience it maybe for a three-day course or a 5-day course as well. And that would generate, you know, economic activity in the Gaeltacht as well and maybe encourage more Minatí and Fíorchaoin to stay in that and provide their accommodation that they do. They could see it as an all year round basis, because a lot of the Minatí and the Fíorchaoin have been leaving, especially since COVID, and we need to address that situation to ensure that we have the Gaeltacht experience there for students and that more students can experience it as well.
Okay, Julian Despon, General Secretary of Conrad na Gaeilge, and of course if you want to take an Irish course or go online, you can go on to Conrad na Gaeilge and there's information there on different courses around the county and country. So thanks very much to Julian. Now, October is Bord Bia's National Potato Day and a chance to reinvent your potato repertoire with an easy to prepare potato recipe. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Lorcan Burke, Potato and Fresh Produce Manager at Bord Bia. Good afternoon, Lorcan.
Hello, Creeper. How are you?
Very
Happy
good.
National Potato Day, I say.
Well, it just came to my mind there. I read something somewhere before that it said, you know you're Irish when a meal isn't a meal without a potato. And I think that sums up the majority of my family who turn their nose up to pasta and rice and all that kind of crack.
Well, that's true. I mean, look, it's in our DNA. Potatoes are the only main meal carbohydrate that we actually grow in this country, and as such, it's been around for her history. It's probably responsible for Irish people being spread all over the world. It's what we've grown up with, and it's, as I say, it's part of our culture, and it's a unique part of our culture. And today, National Potato Day is just a nice way of celebrating that and all things that we take for granted about it, because, as you say, it pops up everywhere, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. I think probably just your staple kind of potato maybe would be mash. I don't know, would that be the most popular? What way do you like to cook your potatoes, Lorcan?
Oh, well, look, I like all the traditional ways. And we know from research, mash, bake, roast and chip are the most popular ways. But look, over the last, we've been trying to reinvent potato with, along with modern cuisine in the last number of years. I mean, since about 2015, we've started campaigns. We've been researching. We know that people nowadays have less time. They want more convenience. They also, you know, they know how to cook traditionally. So we've got we've got recipe websites, which are called potato.ie, with 320 recipes. And in that potato.ie website, we show people how that potatoes are truly a world dish. Like, potatoes are grown in every country in the world, so it makes it really easy to pull in recipes from South America, curries in China, stir fries, you name it. And so, you know, the big message we're trying to get across to people is if you have a bag of potatoes in the home, you have the starting point for any meal and any dish that you want. And then, you know, you just go on to potato.ie and take a look and what's your fancy. It doesn't always have to be the traditional ways, but as much as I do love the traditional ways myself, mashed potatoes and a nice bit of steak and vegetables, you can't top that, can you?
No, you definitely can't. But I think, you know, I'm definitely on the same page there. Sometimes when I think of potato, I just think of the kind of traditional Irish way. And I wouldn't think about it in, you know, other countries. But like you said there, even if you're doing an Asian dish or whatever dish it might be, Indian, whatever, you can use potato. And people in other countries do use potato as a staple too.
Well, you know, there's a reason for that, because potatoes are highly nutritious, number one. They're fat-free, they're gluten-free, they've got lots of vitamins. They're the major contribution to the Irish dietary fibre is through potatoes. But let's not forget also, and we all know there's a cost of living pressures out there. At the moment, you won't get better than a big bag of potatoes in terms of value for money, nutritious ingredients. That, you know, that will really pack a nutritional punch. And, you know, when people are thinking of, as I said before, curries and stir fries, it doesn't take very much to just chop up a potato and throw in. I mean, there's massaman curries there. That's potatoes and ingredients. In fact, China and India are the two biggest potato growers in the world. And oftentimes people just think we grow them in Ireland. But I think the Asian subcontinent definitely realizes their value from a nutritional sense and from their sustainability sense. There's a measure out there saying that potatoes use 100 times less water than rice. And so that's very important where water is very scarce. So, and in our terms, all our potatoes, practically all of our potatoes, table potatoes, are grown in Ireland. The most favourite one is rooster potato. We all know they come in washed and cleaned and bagged. And they all come off our Irish farms. And in eating them, you're supporting Irish communities in some of the counties around Ireland, including Kildare, you know.
Well, that was going to be my next question, Lorcan. What's the most popular potato? But you're saying rooster is the most popular. British Queen's probably a popular one as well? Or where would we be looking?
Yeah, well, it starts off, I mean, potatoes are seasonal, and we have what we call first early, second earlies, and then we have the main crop, and the main crop's only sort of arriving about this time. So the first earlies would arrive in around the end of June. They don't last very long, but very quickly the queens come in, as you mentioned them, and they're a beautiful, flowery potato. You have to steam them or cook them very lightly. Don't let them overboil. But then they're around probably until the main crop arrives. And then, as I say, rooster, Kerris Pink would be the main crop. But rooster are 65% of the overall plantings and 65% of the overall purchase. They're really taking hold of the Irish palate. They're easy, clean, easy to prepare. And they're very versatile. Like, you can bake them, as you say, chip them, make lovely wedges out of them, you know. And almost they've become like, get a bag of rooster for a bag of potatoes and take them home and you can do no wrong. So they're lovely potato. Mm. Actually developed down in Oak Park down there in Carlow. And okay. Actually, the Irish people, we have a unique palate in terms of potatoes, which maybe is a lesser known fact, and probably a reason why you often hear people going abroad saying, oh, I can't get a decent spud abroad. But the fact of the matter is that Irish people like a higher flourier potato, higher trimeter potato. And the reason for that, you might say, why are we so different from the rest of the world? And the answer to that is we have probably the nicest butter in the world, arguably the nicest butter in the world. And that and flourier potatoes go so well with butter.
Yeah.
And whereas on the continent, they have a waxier potato that they tend to cook up in sauces. And so when we eat them, they're a bit of a they're a bit of a shock to the system, you know?
Yeah, definitely a letdown. I have to say, I don't like a soapy potato is what
That's exactly what you're describing.
A nice flowery potato is what I like. A few people have texted in. Judy in Nace says she likes a jacket spud baked. Then Dermot in the Thigh said chips and beans is his number one favourite potato. And mash with lots of gravy is Malachy in Crookstown. Thanks very much, Lorcan Burke, potato and fresh produce manager at Bord Bia, marking National Potato Day here on KFM with us. And thanks very much, Lorcan, for your time this afternoon. That's all I have time for today.